Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Pete Pumphrey. I'm from Bishop, and I am the chair. I want to thank the members of the public for coming to our meeting. You do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. Kimberly Cox from Hellendale. Keith Diaz from Rosamond. Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee, Don Jardine from Markleyville, and Eric Sandell from Truckee. The executive officer is Patty Kuyumjin. Would you please introduce the staff that are here with us today to the many members of the public?
I have Kimmer Niemeyer over here to the left, who's our legal counsel, and Amber, who's stepping in for Sue Genera. We have Chuck Curtis in the front row of Division Manager, Doug Smith. We have Lori Kemper, our assistant executive officer here. We have Dale Payne right here behind the table. We have Richard Booth over there. Mr. Robert Tuckerman. And Alan is in
there. Bear with me. The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item, so our decision would be based on all available information. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please fill out an orange card indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before the board to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statement, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are: treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks, no violent or contemptuous or disruptive behavior. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the regional board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Control Board website. First item on the agenda are the minutes of the meeting held October 9th and 10th in Barstow.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. Any comments by any board member? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Item 2, reports by Water Board Chair and Water Board members. Mr. Jardine.
No report.
Ms. Cox.
I recently had the privilege of attending the WQCC, and I must admit I'm still in information overload. It was a great event.
Mr. Diaz.
No report, thank you.
Mr. Sandell.
Nothing today, thanks.
Dr. Horn.
Well, I also was at the WQCC, and I have 3 pages of notes. So Kim is right. It was a lot of information. First of all, one of the reasons I like going to WQCC is to hear what other regional boards are doing. So, for example, because I get good ideas, and I'm happy to share them with everybody. The Central Coast, and I'm not quite sure what they're doing, but they have some policy in encouraging low-impact development for the purpose of encouraging groundwater recharge. And I think it would be interesting to know whether there's something there that might be useful for our region. But in another presentation, somebody from the Los Angeles region mentioned that there can be problems. I wasn't aware of this with LID, of purged water tables, liquefaction, and maintenance of LID. So anyway, something to look into there. The North Coast has a non-industrial timber policy. Dan, I don't know the details, but that was the first I heard of them doing that. Most of their stuff has been oriented more at the industrial side, right? They are very proud of the fact that they got 100% of their dairies enrolled in their dairy permitting program in the first year. So I don't know what they're doing, but they seem to be happy with their procedure. Versus Santa Ana, where all of their dairies are on NPDES permits by their request of the dairies. So a lot of different approaches to dairy management throughout the state. At least four regions are dealing with marijuana: North Coast, Central Valley, Lahontan, and maybe the Colorado region. So there was, I guess maybe there's some activity at the state board level to look into managing, regulating marijuana growing.
Chris Kerrigan is leading the effort.
Oh, he is, okay.
And leading the whole team.
The San Francisco board was very proud of the fact that they did not cause any problems during the America's Cup. but one of the things they mentioned was that they had a program, and I don't know if this was the Bay Institute or the Water Board, but anyway, there's the Clean Voters Program. If you have enrolled in the Clean Voters Program, you can fly a flag. And apparently it's very popular, and people are, and I don't know if that's something that we could do on Lake Tahoe. I'll talk about the climate change stuff at the end. During Michael Laufer's ever-popular update on the law, he talked about Bagley Keene and strategic planning, and there was a question from some of the regional boards whether we could do strategic planning in closed session. The answer is no. But they did share that the state board is doing strategic planning in open session 3 or 4 times a year, so that might be something for us to talk about as a board, whether we want to do strategic planning in public session. He also said that that a kind of serial meeting is okay if the subject is not about an upcoming collective decision. And it's always okay for us board members to talk amongst ourselves about philosophy and general priorities. There was a case, so historically, the topic is unfunded mandates. Historically, water was exempt from a requirement that the state had to reimburse local agencies when the state requires a higher level of performance than the federal government. But water is no longer exempt. So there was a lawsuit brought against the water boards for regulating municipal water. And so there are a number of cases that are working their way through the court system, but the wording that is used is California is implementing the maximum extent practicable, which one round the state won that was consistent, that was not an unfunded mandate. So
these come out of the municipal stormwater permits, and there were things such as in LA requiring the cities to put garbage cans at bus stops to collect the trash. And so part of the question was whether that was something that was consistent with the Clean Water Act, or if it was something above and beyond what the Clean Water Act required. And if it's above and beyond what the federal government is requiring, then the state has to provide the funding for that. So there's a lot of things that we put in our municipal stormwater permits that don't seem necessarily directly related to stormwater, but that was upheld. A lot of these things were upheld. And the case that's coming out of San Diego is going to be even more, there's a lot more things that are being challenged. LA's was pretty, I think, just a few particular issues made it up to the court.
We spent half a day talking about environmental justice, and the big takeaway is, okay, this is my takeaway. I'm not sure that there was a consensus. on this point. My takeaway is basically we as an agency have to have some cultural change whereby this is not environmental justice and facilitation is not Gita's job, and it's not just something where you can... There was a website presentation about environmental justice that, frankly, I didn't get the point of because it was like, okay, great, there's all this information on the web. How does this help us do environmental justice more effectively? And so it's really a question where everybody is thinking about, every staff person and every board member is thinking about how we can do a better job of communicating with our stakeholders and listening to our stakeholders, what we write in our letters, what we say in our board meetings, just when you're on on-site visits. We will never get to where we need to go if it's siloed in Gita's shop, basically. So it's everyone's responsibility. Okay, climate change. This was the big eye-opener to me. So there's a fellow who did a very detailed study at the 2-kilometer grid for the L.A. Basin. And what jumped out at me was that temperature increase in our side of so it slapped over into Antelope Valley. It's like, okay, that part of the map was colored in red in terms of how much temperature change there's going to be versus the LA Basin itself, which is, we all know, is more moderated by being close to the water. So the results of this modeling are that, okay, if Lake Arrowhead's average snowfall is 40 inches per year right now, it's going to decrease to 22 inches per year, cut in half. And I think that's over, I'm not sure about the, I was trying to look this up, I think this is to 2050. And, of course, that doesn't take into account the fact that the rate of snowmelt is going to increase, too. At least, so they did 2 scenarios. One was business as usual, and one was if the whole world adopted 32 today. So the best case scenario and the worst case scenario. Well, that's not even the worst case scenario, but the most expected scenario. And even if the whole world adopted AB 32 today, 70% of the effects that they are predicting from the business as usual effect, we will see 70% of those effects. So if we mitigated everything completely today, we'd still see 70, because there's such huge lag times in these in the processes involved with climate change. Fire. There will be many more acres burned in July, August, and September. There will be smaller fires, and there will be some shift away from the Santa Ana fires. So there will be a little decrease in the October-November fire window, but much more in July, August, and September. Groundwater management. This was really interesting to me. There will be less fresh water available. And so this woman looked at the patterns of groundwater pumping and use relative to drought cycles. And so what she found is that our policies are lagging behind the actual drought cycles. So when a drought occurs, there's more demand on groundwater pumping. And but then when the drought, wait a second, I'm not explaining this very well. So when the drought is off, instead of banking the extra water that we have, we it's like, oh, suddenly we have all this extra water. So there's a boom in development or water intensive development. So we're not banking the water that we can bank during the wet years, and then we're over-pumping during the dry years. So so I was putting the modeling from the L.A. Basin together with the impact on groundwater pumping and thinking, gee, next to the California coast, the Lamont region is going to be one of the hardest hit regions from climate change in California. I mean, it's... So it's sobering. An interesting case study this woman talked about. So she was promoting groundwater drought reserves. So your water banking on steroids, but you know, really, you know, there's a need to push ahead on groundwater banking. She talked about a case study, which I thought was interesting, where in Scotts Valley, the community, so it came, the pressure for this came from the community, not from a water board, but the community passed a building moratorium, and which sounds a lot like a connection ban. And the result of that was all the stakeholders came together and developed an integrated water plan. So there is a positive side to some of these hammers. So this is already having an impact on the coast. So there was a water treatment facility that was up for relicensing on the California coast, and I forget which agency, whether it was the Coastal Commission or whether it was a water board, but in any case, they are being forced to completely rebuild the plant higher up. So already adaptation is occurring. A point was made in stormwater, groundwater pollution issues in the LA Basin that instead of cleanup, that it was maybe more cost effective to require wellhead treatment, which is a point I believe Mr. Sandel has made. And Lori Oaken said that we could do that. That's it.
That we could do what?
That we could require wellhead treatment instead of cleanup.
In other words, treat when you're going to use the water instead of while you're storing it.
Right.
But that would be, wouldn't that be the agencies that provide the water purveyors, as opposed to?
Could we issue an order for cleanup that would include wellhead treatment on point of view, at point of use, I should think.
Yeah. Okay.
As being equivalent.
Yeah. I just have a couple of things. Monday of last week was the chair's call, and it was a follow-up to WQCC. And since I hadn't been at WQCC because I was off wearing a different hat, it probably wasn't as meaningful to me as it could have been, but there were a couple things that were really drilled into the call by state board member Franz Weber, which was this idea that that regional boards should spend a lot more time and effort on two things that were, I guess, principal topics at WQCC. One of them was this interaction with disadvantaged communities, and the other was climate change. And the discussion was sort of invoked this sense of magic in that it was expected that somehow or another staff people could be freed up to do more work in these two areas. Now, you know, no one was able to tell us was how you free up these staff people, and even more importantly, I think, what you tell them to do. So let's say that you were able to free up one half of a person to do work with disadvantaged communities. There was no sense that anybody knew what to tell them to go do with their time, and really sort of similarly with climate change. So I think the handwriting on the wall is that these two issues are going to really be emphasized by the state board, and that there's going to be pressure put on the regional boards to act out this set of priorities. But there's not going to be a lot of direction about how those should be acted out and what it means in the Lahontan region, say, as opposed to some other region, to do these things. So the first thing that the state people asked was for the regional chairs to give their ideas And there were a lot of ideas, but they were sort of incremental, and they didn't amount to much in the way of policy. So naturally, the idea that gained the most traction was to have the executive officers figure out A, how to free up these people, and B, what to tell them to do. So I mention this for two reasons. One is watch out, Patty, because there are these people out there with this idea. And two, watch out us, because I think that we're going to be asked as a board to create a plan for how to do this. I think it's in our best interest to think about this ourselves now, rather than wait around and have some really terrific idea developed in Sacramento and then brought to us and say, here's what you're going to do. A couple things that were suggested that I thought were pretty decent ideas was, one was, instead of creating an outreach person, because they really wanted the boards to do outreach, whatever that might happen to be, and there was the notion that perhaps you would create an outreach staff person. And at times I couldn't figure out if this was a person from the board or a person from the staff, because they just wanted designated people to deal with these designated issues. But there was a suggestion that maybe you could train a lot of people to do a little bit of outreach in their daily activities, so that when they did the things that they were already tasked to do, they did them in such a way that it created better opportunities for outreach. My takeaway from this is that, thank God, Patty is the executive officer, because she understands what it means to be inclusive in what you do. And I think that that's really what they're talking about here when they're talking about all this outreach, is collaboration, bringing stakeholders into a position where they not only feel that they're being involved, but that they actually are, and then doing a lot of partnering. I think that that's the way that we're going to be, only way that we're going to be able to do work with disadvantaged communities, is to find partnerships, not only with the communities, but with other agencies or other organizations, like integrated regional water planning groups that are already working with these communities and are, in fact, made up of members of the communities. So this is on the way. I think that it requires a lot more thought than perhaps it's been given. I think that we need to figure out how we're going to integrate these two thrusts into the things that we're normally doing, as opposed perhaps to creating a whole new division or workload requirement called disadvantaged community or climate change person. So that's a heads up. And I've been on a lot of chairs calls, and this is the first one that where I thought, oh, this is something that is threatening to us. Normally, I think we can weather these storms, or it doesn't have anything to do with us because we're little. Not so this, I'm afraid. The better news is that there is going to be a third Sierra Water Summit next June, and the dates are either the 12th and 13th or the 19th or 20th, and I'm not sure which. The reason I know about this is the State Bar of California has agreed again to be a partner sponsor of the Water Summit, and so we're waiting for confirmation from the potential facility as to which of those two sets of dates are available. And so if people have ideas about what kinds of things should be talked about at a Sierra Water Summit, please let me know, I can get it to the other partners as we start to set the agenda. Last year's, I thought, was really a valuable thing. And I think that there was a lot of attendance, a lot of people participated, and there's probably a lot to build on. So let me know if you have any thoughts about what ought to be included in such a agenda.
Before we move on, I'm just wondering if we could take a minute and see if anybody has any feedback on what we've said here. And does it have to be, I mean, can staff chime in on this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anybody can chime in. Help us here. If you have any ideas.
Well, I think Laura and I were sort of brainstorming how we can influx environmental justice and climate change in some of the things we're doing, and I think we're still kind of bouncing around ideas because there's no any magical staff dropping from the skies anytime soon to help us. And also, back to the EOs, we meet again the first week of December, and I suspect this is on our agenda.
It is.
I know it is. To talk about this and what can we practically do in terms of both environmental justice and climate change. Some of the ideas I've heard on environmental justice is, of course, devoting a staff person to this, infusing it throughout the organization as a whole for outreach, or using the tool that OEA has, the database that OEA has created that lets you know by zip code where disadvantaged communities have more cumulative impact from pollution, how we could use it as a tool to inform us in decision making. And on climate change, there's been talked about regional boards holding some sort of listening sessions, workshops, something public to get input from stakeholders in the community about climate change concerns in the area and what can the regional board do about it in its day-to-day operations. And I do have a suggestion for you, Pete, for your Sierra Summit. Dr. Alex Hall, who gave us nice modeling information from UCLA on Los Angeles, is doing a similar study on the Sierra Nevadas, and he could potentially give an update to everyone there about his modeling efforts for the Sierra Nevada, which is his next research project.
That's awesome.
I think those are all good ideas. I like the idea of training several staff people rather than siloing the environmental justice question. I think that's enough.
Or just training for all staff on what to consider and how to incorporate those.
Yeah, I mean, whatever we can afford to do, the more the merrier, sure.
Right.
On the climate change issue, I think engaging stakeholders is, we got to do that. I'm wondering if there's something where we, this idea of the public strategic planning thing that was mentioned, where we could do something, staff and board together, so it's not a workshop, it's some different format where there's more free-flowing ideas exchanged back and forth. I mean, you educating us about what you see. So it would be more of a discussion as opposed to a workshop. But maybe we could think about doing something like that. Maybe we can develop a strategy for how we would go about engaging stakeholders, what the first issues we would discuss with stakeholders might be. I mean, I'm just brainstorming off the top of my head here, but
It might be worth trying that conversation at our February. We're talking about bringing our priorities and accomplishments back to the board in February, so similar to what we did in March at Lake Arrowhead last year, where we did big program. We did program overview for all our programs, but we also talked about overarching priorities for the region. And what I'm hearing today is that dealing with disadvantaged communities and climate change should be on that list of things we want to grapple with, but maybe there's an opportunity to do a little brainstorming about some initial steps or whatever at that February meeting.
Anyone else? Your mildly comment would be sort of to echo Dr. Horn's, I don't think you go out and just do environmental justice.
Right.
And so you have somebody who rides a bicycle around or in a car or a special truck, and they go do environmental justice. I think it's a concern that you weave into all of the things
right.
that you do, all of the things that you do, so that maybe there's a point person or persons, depending on how teams are made up, that people know that they can come to make sure that they express environmental justice concerns or information. But I think we need to weave these two concerns into what we do and what
yeah.
we have to do, as opposed to trying to take away from what we do and have to do in order to set up some special program.
Peter?
Yes, sir.
I agree with all of the comments that have been given so far, and I'd just like to point out the obvious that we have our own, I think, excellent example of environmental justice, which is our ongoing work with INCRA. It's not like we're, insensitive to those issues, and we could extend that model to other areas. We just need a little guidance as to where.
And just so you know, I've asked the lovely Nina Kasai to come to our region to do a training class for our staff on environmental justice and public participation. She has a lot of tools for listening sessions and other things that will help with the staff. So that's on our list of training for staff that she's going to come out here and kind of help us all understand environmental justice and public participation, not
mm-hmm.
just that, just
mm-hmm.
all aspects of it.
Great. Okay, item 3, Executive Officer's Report.
Thank you, Chairman Pumphrey, and good afternoon, board members. I'm Patty Kinnugen, your executive officer. I, too, enjoy very much WQCC and learned a lot and spent a lot of time talking to my colleagues at the other regional boards, because I do agree. We learn a lot by just sharing information with our other colleagues on various aspects. So it's a great session. I encourage all of you, if you have opportunities to attend future WQCCs, to do so. Really informative. And some of the things I'm going to talk about will look at some of the things that you've talked about at WQCC, particularly like public outreach. I want to let you know that we've been working really closely with our state board and Department of General Services to improve our Victimville office.
Mm-hmm.
The office has needed some retrofits, both internal and external, to improve safety for our employees. And so a lot of those retrofits have been made. But that's not the good news here. The good news here is that we're looking for a new office in Victorville. And I was told I couldn't talk about that much, but I think it's to a point now where I think I can. And so we have a bead on a good spot in Victorville that's roughly twice the size of our existing office, much nicer digs. It also has a very big conference room that we can use for potentially small board meetings and public workshops, so that's kind of exciting. If all goes well, and keep my fingers crossed, because these lease negotiations are tricky, we might be able to move into our new offices in Victorville late summer. So that would be very exciting news. Also, keep posted, because we're going to have a staff, and you guys are welcome to compete in a photo contest, and we're hoping to use these photos to decorate both this room and the one down south. So if you have any wonderful pictures, when that comes around, please submit your artwork to us so we can consider that. This past week, we were busy. We had our second annual all-staff training, actually, in this room right here. We had a great turnout of staff from both Victorville and here, and I think the sessions went very well. We covered a range of issues. We spent a lot of time on priorities, what Lori mentioned, for the regional board, as well as we drilled down into unit programs, priorities, and which will then build upon individual staff work plans. We're doing all this to build information so that we can present it to the board in February in terms of priority
as well as have the staff do their regular work planning activities and build into the state board's performance tracking. So we're trying to merge all these different efforts into one process to inform the board, as well as the board give us guidance and input on priorities so we can also adjust the workload of all of our staff. As you know, there's more work that can be done. We now have new climate change and justice needs and desires. So, you know, it's a zero-sum game. If you do new work in this area, something else is going to drop off the plate. So that's part of this whole process, is we're trying to manage all of the workload and put priorities and decide, does this really need 100 hours of work or 50 hours of work? So that will all come to you in February. So we very much will welcome the board's input on that. So we spent some time on the all-staff training on that, and we'll be doing some more breakout sessions on that with individual units and staff to formulate our ideas. We also spent a bunch of time on organizational improvement. This is a fault from last year's effort. And we got a lot of great ideas from our staff breakout sessions that we hope to put in place next year. We covered areas of, this is where it gets to what you talked about, WQC, public outreach and public education. What can we reasonably do in our region? How can we do a better job? And so we got some good ideas from staff on what we could do in terms of public outreach. I hope to overlay with this discussion about environmental justice. How to improve our internal procedures and templates, which is real important to staff to improve efficiency. Team building and communication improvements, particularly when projects span two offices or two units, when there's multiple people involved, how can we work better as a team to get those projects completed? We had some good ideas on our administration, how to improve that, and document review, and expanding our mentoring skills for our new staff coming up, and just how we can share ideas with each other. A good portion of that 2 days of training was spent on exercises to improve our communication skills. I mean both internally and externally. I think these skills that we all learn, and some of these activities were kind of fun, actually, will help us become better regulators, improve our team building and collaboration skills, and it will help us out with our public outreach as well, I think. We closed up our 2 days of training with presentations from Scott Ferguson and Eric Taxer and Kim over here. They gave great and informed presentations to staff on separation of functions and how that works and how to implement that. And they shared updates from the board's enforcement subcommittees in terms of what did the board talk about and what are some actions that will follow up from that. As well as we talked about the SEP pilot project and talk to staff about what was underway on that, because not all the staff can attend the board meetings and we're aware of these efforts, so I think they're very appreciative of the staff excellent staff presentations they got. And this shift gears to something entirely different now. At the end of October, I made a request to the state board from the cleanup abatement account to ask for some more money for permanent monitoring wells to address the perchloric contamination in Barstow. As a reminder, we did get cleanup and abatement money in the past from the state board to do that Barstow investigation, as you recall, and to provide some replacement drinking water to some of the affected folks down there. But we need additional funds, and we're going to ask them for funds for sentinel wells, which are critical for containing to monitor the movement of the plume and provide early warning system for owners of downstream municipal and private water wells in terms of if that plume moves. I think that's really important. It's that perchloric contamination, recall, is we don't have a viable, responsible party, and it was a result of illegal dumping. So that is the appropriate place for us to get money, and so we hope the state board will give us that grant. Our region, and we talked about this a little bit earlier today too, is going to play a leadership role in leading a statewide grazing and regulatory action project. We call that GRAP. I'm the project sponsor, and we're lucky to have Cindy Wise help lead the effort for the state. Cindy is working with the other regional board staff, and we're putting together an effort. Kim is also very active in that effort as our counsel with the other regions. And a lot of stuff we're going to do some heavy lifting. I just want you to know that's a lot of work for us next year, but I think it's really important we do this. So we're at the very beginning stages of it. We're kind of scoping out listening sessions? What would they look like? Begin that first step with the stakeholders. And what are some key questions to answer? What are some problems we can solve? What do they, the stakeholders, think we should address? And we'll move along the process next year. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a lot of work. Based on these listening sessions, sometime next year, we'll likely craft some regulatory approaches. There's about 38% of California is covered by grazing lands, and there are over 100 streams affected that are on impaired list. Having TMDLs reach one of those is not practical. So this is why we're trying to reach out to stakeholders and learn from the other regions and try to craft a statewide policy. That's easier said than done, I know, but it's important work to be done. Again, we don't get any more PYs for that, but we're gonna make that work. Something else to show up the board. Again, shifting gears again to down south. On November 4th, I received notification from the State Board that they will consider the PG&E petition regarding the plume delineation cleanup and abatement order I signed this past January, as you recall. This order required PG&E to fully delineate the Hinkley Chrome plume, especially in the northernmost area at the Hinkley Gap and the eastern area at Dixie Road. The order asked PG&E to statistically evaluate the chrome concentration in domestic wells outside the continuous plume boundary and to look at increasing trends of contamination. The order made more specific how they would draw the lines of the plume. Based on the results of that statistical analysis, PG&E could be required to install additional monitoring wells to further define the plume. We as staff are working on a written response to the State Board and preparing the administrative. Usually we get 30 days. Given the holidays, we've asked for extension until December 18th, and I'm hopeful they'll give us that extension to pull the record together. What happens after that, I'm not quite clear, because the State Board will take all the information that we've submitted, they'll take it under advisement, and they'll give some direction after that, whether they're having a public hearing, whether they need more information. I think we're still a little bit unclear about what's
going on. Well, there is, as part of that petition, there is a request for stay. So they're asking the State Board to, otherwise they'd be required to comply with the requirements of the order.
Yeah.
They're asking that the State Board say that they don't have to follow through with the requirements of that order while the State Board's making its determination. So that will happen first, I think within maybe 60 days they'll decide whether or not they're going to issue the stay or not, and then I think they have like 300-something days to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they go over that, they have gone over that time period in the past, and they just take it up on their own motion, so they aren't necessarily limited by the 300 days.
I also have with me still two requests, which I mentioned at the last board meeting, to amend the cleanup and abatement order for Hinkley Whole House replacement. One is from PG&E, and that's asking to change the buffer, or freeze the buffer, I should say. Another one is from Hinkley residents to make more, it affects the plume delineation. The public comment period has ended for those, and I have reviewed them. This recent information from the State Board regarding the petition will factor into that discussion, and I'm hoping to make a decision on those two requests by the end of this week. Those are all the issues I wanted to cover today to update the board on. I don't know if you have any questions or...
Patty, earlier you mentioned something about a perchlorate plume, but I did not catch the location.
Barstow.
Okay.
It's the Barstow perchlorate plume that we investigated last year.
Any other questions? Yes.
Patty, on the whole house systems, I'm just real concerned about the ongoing maintenance costs of those systems. Is there any discussion on the table at all? I've heard PG&E will carry that cost for 5 years, and after that, then what? These are thousands of dollars a year.
Well, two things to talk about that. One, in January, and we're coordinating with PG&E, they'll be hosting a meeting of those residents who have a whole house replacement system, which is, I think, 35-ish, about that. Yeah. That they'll be providing each of the owners a detailed cost sheet of what it costs to operate in terms of electricity, maintenance, and what is in their individual whole house replacement units, because I understand they're a little bit different. And they're hoping to have a dialogue with the residents about all of those issues. What happens when the MCL comes? What happens if my unit breaks down? What do I do? I'm hoping to have that as a dialogue. Now, PG has always left the door a little bit open about when the MCL comes down. They just have said consistently that it's not the responsibility after that. But they keep on, see, I know, I've, in discussions with them, they seem to have left the door open just a tad to work with the community. And the numbers, I think, are a lot less of those who have whole house replacement than when they initially started this process.
Well, some of that filtration media has a cradle-to-grave toxic component to it, so I'm a little concerned when they leave, what are the residents going to have to do, you know, as far as disposal of that media when it's used up?
Well, I'm hoping we could talk about all of that. I mean, the residents are on residential. Traditionally, there are exemptions in hazardous waste laws for residential waste, different than commercial waste, so I'm not sure they're going to handle that either.
Any other questions? Thank you. Item 4 is adoption of the uncontested calendar, which is items 5 and 6.
I move to adopt the uncontested calendar.
Been moved and seconded. Any comments from any board members? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. This concludes this segment of the or session of the regular meeting for today. We'll be back here at 7 o'clock this evening. And thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your help.